There are more than 40 million enslaved people in the world today. That's a pretty overwhelming statement. And what we're going to do today is to interview Raleigh Sadler. His book is called Vulnerable. It's also subtitled Rethinking Human Trafficking. And find out more about this problem, we'll go to Raleigh, who speaks on these topics. He's published at the Gospel Coalition, the Huffington Post, the Ethics and Religious Liberty Commission, and others. And in 2013, he began a movement called Let My People Go, which grew into a nonprofit organization that comes alongside and empowers local churches to address the injustice of human trafficking in a holistic manner. Raleigh, it's nice to have you on the program today.
Well, it's great to be on. Thank you.
How would you define human trafficking?
Well, I think a lot of people, when we think about the definition of human trafficking, it's easy to go to what we see on the media, whether it be on the local news, whether it be on the nightly news, whether it be in a book we read or on a movie we watched. And so a lot of us will define it as things like abduction or severe types of exploitation, but we wouldn't really have a workable definition. And so what I propose is that we define it in a simple yet clear way, that human trafficking is the exploitation of vulnerability for commercial gain, whether that be for sex, labor, or domestic servitude. Anyone that is forced to do something that they wouldn't do on their own, and anyone whose vulnerability is leveraged and exploited, these people are trafficked.
It's it puts it back to the basic thing causing the human trafficking problem is greed and a desire for money.
Yeah, it could be that. It could be a desire for power. Oftentimes, traffickers are using means to traffic. You know, they're using force, fraud, and coercion to get people to do things that they wouldn't do for that person's own benefit, whether it's for a financial benefit, social benefit, what have you. But oftentimes, at the root of these means, at the root of force, fraud, and coercion is a desire for power and control. And so you'll find people who are exploiting, in a lot of ways, to bolster their own brokenness, to bolster their own insecurities, but they're doing it because in hurting and exploiting someone else for their own gain, they feel as though they're getting what they need.
Yeah, I was looking at Good Morning America today, and they were talking about Prince Andrew. Are you familiar with that story?
Yeah, a little bit, yes.
And so this is an example of human trafficking, and in this particular case, probably for power and control as much as for money.
Right, and it's a reminder that anyone can do it. Oftentimes when we think about human trafficking, we think that traffickers or sex buyers or anyone who's contributing to it, they're just the people that are on the fringes. They're the people who are a little rough, quote unquote. Like, they're the people that you see and you're like, oh, I don't know, I better lock my doors. But oftentimes those people are the people who could be trafficked. It's a power and control game. And so a lot of times traffickers and sex buyers and those who are exploiting, they can look just like us.
I've been doing addiction work for 35 plus years, and one of the things that I see as a addiction behavior is the control issue, trying to control other people, and if you have that problem, it's to you an addiction, and the brokenness of your condition just keeps you continuing to do it. So we have to get to the underlying cause for trafficking, other than just the fact that I'm going to make a few bucks on doing that. And it's very prominent in our society. You said 40 million. I wouldn't be surprised if it wasn't more than that. But I also see it as a spiritual problem, a problem of the battle between good and evil. And taking that perspective on it, it opens up one's thinking to other ways of combating this problem other than what is common and available on the news. Why did you write this book, Raleigh?
I wrote the book because I wanted to help the reader to really understand that they can do something. A lot of times we think that we can't do anything. We hear about a big issue facing the world, and we're thinking, what in the world can I do? I'm not qualified. I haven't been trained. I'm not a lawyer. I'm not a police officer. I don't know how to do aftercare. I haven't gone and gotten a psychology degree. So what does it mean for me to do something? And really, in the book, I talk about how God motivates vulnerable people like you and I to love other vulnerable people by becoming vulnerable for us. I talk about how we can tap into our own vulnerability and through that serve other vulnerable people. Rather than exploit their vulnerability, we can love them in their vulnerability and see people who are isolated and susceptible to exploitation come into a community where they can be loved and where they can thrive. And so, really, for me, I wrote the book to show people that they can do something. And even towards the end of the book, I give 100 examples of things you can do today to fight human trafficking. So I kind of build an approach, and then I say, all right, here are 100 things that you could do. If you want to spend the next 100 days doing each one of these, you can do this. And in this way, you are pushing back on the darkness.
Well, your program has to do with involving churches, does it not?
Right, absolutely.
So how do you go to a church and say, here's what I think that you could do in your local community to help this problem?
Yeah, when I walk into a church, I really, my goal is to inspire and to say that you can do something. But then, you know, every now and then there will be someone in the church that said, we're already doing that. You know, we have a program that's reaching, you know, this many people. But the problem is the entire church isn't engaged. You've got 5 people. That's about it. And these people are tired. They're exhausted. They don't feel like they've been respected. They just keep working and working and working, and nothing is coming their way. And so what we do is we say, hey, let's help you build a team that will do an assessment. This assessment will take you to those who are already working with the most vulnerable populations in your community. And we want to discover who is most likely the target of an exploiter in your community. It could be your immigrant neighbor. It could be your neighbor in foster care. It could be your neighbor who's been impacted by incarceration, whether that person was incarcerated or they're the child of someone who is incarcerated. It could be someone who is coming from a home of cyclical substance abuse or cyclical poverty. There could be mental illness. We do not know. These could be those who are in ethnic enclaves or ethnic minority in your community. Like, how are we caring for those who are most vulnerable? And you ask them that question, and then you learn, and you keep asking organizations that question until something bubbles to the top, and you say, okay, in our area code, we've discovered that this group is most vulnerable. And then we work with the church to help everyone in the church have solid, tangible tools so when they leave the church, they know what to do to meet a need. And so, yeah, that's basically kind of how we start a partnership with a church. Our goal is to help them recognize and respond to the vulnerability in their community.
So your book is entitled Vulnerable, and you start your discussion with that word. do you say to the people that you're talking to help them understand who these vulnerable people are and how to find them?
I often tell people it's the people that you think, it's the people that we tend to think are perpetrators that are probably most likely the most vulnerable. When we see someone who is currently in prostitution and we say, well, she chose that. Well, we don't know that. We don't know that at all. Maybe that person was forced into it. Maybe that person was coerced into it. Maybe that person was groomed. We don't know this. We don't know that that person wasn't sexually exploited at an early age and feels like this is her only option or his only option. And so it's helping people lift the labels off people that they've placed on. You know, when someone sees a new immigrant and says, oh, that person's just coming here to take my job. Well, we don't know that either. Maybe that person's fleeing something. Maybe that person is being exploited. We have to kind of look beneath the outer veneer and really get to know people. Really, our model is equipping people to have healthy conversations where they can love well. I had a group come to work with me in New York City, and in New York City we do something called the Let My People Go experience, where people can come in and learn how to fight human trafficking in real time by loving their most vulnerable neighbors. And someone said, you know, we can't fight human trafficking unless we get to know people, right, Raleigh? And I said, that's exactly it. And so that's what we're trying to do with those sitting in the pew.
What has shocked you the most about your work in human trafficking?
That anyone can be trafficked, though statistics would lean heavily towards women and children. Anyone can be trafficked, and anyone can be a trafficker. You know, when we see people in royalty who are tangled up in this, when we see people who are the social elite tangled up in this, millionaires, billionaires, it just forces us to re-examine our assumptions.
Right. Okay, in your press kit that you sent me, there were some myths about human trafficking and how to fight it, and five myths that you deal with in the book. Can you quickly discuss those?
Well, I can share a few myths. Sometimes people get confused by the title human trafficking or trafficking in persons. And this came around because of drug trafficking and arms trafficking. People said, okay, well then there is human trafficking. Well, a lot of people will conflate, because in arms trafficking and drug trafficking, there's this idea of movement, this idea of smuggling. A lot of people will say, well, all human trafficking is smuggling. It's moving a person from one point to another. That is not true. You do not have to be moved to be trafficked. A lot of people are trafficked not by abductors, but by people they know, by family members, by boyfriends, by husbands. I had someone in a church once tell me that her husband, who I believe was a deacon, after church would take her back home and sell her to people in the church. This happens. A friend of mine who had a nanny was exploited by a Christian nanny to people in the church. This can happen in any echelon of society, but it's not always implying movement. So when someone says, well, we don't have much human trafficking here because we don't have a highway near here, that doesn't mean anything. If you have vulnerable people, then chances are you have someone who desires to exploit them, whether that be for sex, labor, or domestic servitude. Another thing is people believe, oh, well, human trafficking only happens at big sporting events like the Super Bowl. It can and does happen, because any time where there's a lot of people, there will be a lot of demand. When there's a demand for sexual activity outside of healthy confines, when there's a demand for this, then there will be exploitation. And so when people are at a sporting event, sure, that can happen. But that's not the only way it happens, and it's not confined to one day. Again, human trafficking happens where there is vulnerability. And when a lot of people will say, well, human trafficking is sex trafficking. No. Like I've said multiple times, human trafficking can be for labor, domestic servitude. It could be for sex. It could be for all of these things. In some developing nations, it can even be for organ harvesting. So really, we have to think through what is the core issue in our community and how can we come alongside of that?
Well, Raleigh, there have been other books on human trafficking. How does your book differ from what else is out there?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's a lot of books, and I actually mentioned this in my foreword, in my intro. I talk about how there are books written on the financial aspect. There are books written on the racial aspect. There are books written on a global aspect. For me, this book was written to show people that vulnerability runs through this. And oftentimes, that's a sidebar in a lot of books, is the vulnerability side. And so what I tell people is read this book and read it in concert with other books, and you'll get a more holistic picture. But this book was also written for Christians who are wanting to do something. Now, anyone, regardless of their faith, can read this and get something very positive out of it. But Vulnerable Rethinking Human Trafficking is to ultimately equip people who are Christians who actually want to do something and don't want to hurt people while they're doing it. And so it's really to give them the tools and the approach that's really needed. And so it's kind of coming from a Christian, Judeo-Christian perspective.
You help churches set up programs within their local church. How would someone who's listening today and get this information from you on how to get involved?
So a great way to partner with Let My People Go is to go to our website. Our website is www.lmpg, like Let My People Go, lmpgnetwork.org. And that has all the information that you would need, and you could email us through the website.
Okay. Do you have other things on your website other than contact information?
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about the issue of human trafficking. There are resources and tools that you can use, all sorts of fun things, different articles that have been written. There are a lot of resources there for those who are interested.
Okay. What important questions have I forgot to ask you?
I feel like you've asked a lot of great questions, and I think probably the question that a lot of people would have is, what are some things I can do right now? Like, what are a couple of things that I can do right now to fight human trafficking? One, I would say, is to learn more, to become aware. Read books like Vulnerable Rethinking Human Trafficking. Read books like A Crime So Monstrous by Ben Skinner. Not for Sale by Dave Batstone. These are starting points. Read these books. Read about human trafficking online. Go to PolarisProject.org. It's a hub for human trafficking information. You can learn about the signs, the red flags, who to call. These are great things to learn. As you're learning about human trafficking, post about it. Put it on social media. Talk to people about it. Go into your church and put up information from the local anti-trafficking organization. Help people know about this. Start a book club. Have Vulnerable or another book be your focus for that month. Read it. Talk about it. Wrestle through it together. Take the human trafficking hotline and put it in your phone. The human trafficking hotline is 1-888-373-7888. And if you see something, you can actually call and say, hey, I noticed this. What do we do about it? These are things that you can do that are concrete, that are easy, and that will not leave you feeling helpless.
And as you said in the end of the book, appendix, you put down 100 ways that a person listening can fight human trafficking today. And they might not want to do all 100 of them, but there's 100 possibilities there. And I would say that a person who is interested in this problem ought to get your book and read those 100 things and see what they can do personally to make a difference.
Yeah, absolutely.
Really, it's been great talking to you today about this problem, which has been a problem that's been going on for as long as people have been on the earth, I think.
But, yeah.
You know, and it
will... People say it's the world's oldest profession, but I think we should flip that and say it's often the world's oldest oppression.
Right. But, If someone gets motivated by listening to you speak and getting your book and reading what you have to say and everything, and could just do one or two of those things that you listed in there, it would make a great difference. The more people that can do one or two things that haven't done anything before will make a great difference. So I'm glad to be able to talk to you about your book, Vulnerable, Rethinking Human Trafficking, and where's the best place to get a copy?
You can find a copy online at Amazon.com. You can also find a copy in really any bookstore, but I've found that the best way to get it is through Amazon.com, and if you want to learn more or download a free chapter, you can go to thevulnerablebook.com. That is the book website. And it has all the information on the book, and you can kind of dive in without, like, for a little bit and read it before you commit to buying it. But right now I think Amazon is doing a sale on it, so it's a great time to buy.
Raleigh Sadler, Vulnerable. Thanks you so much, Raleigh, for being on the program today and exposing this terrific problem in the world to all the people that are listening. We really respect your work and praise you for it. So thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.